Hello, listeners. Welcome to Business IQ Radio here on 105.1 WBNH. We're delighted to be talking to you again this week. This is Don Byrne, one of your hosts, and I'm here with my friend, colleague, and co-host, Andrea O'Brien. Hello, Andrea.
Hello, Don. How are you doing today?
Doing very, very well, and an interesting guest coming up, but we'll get into that in just a minute. I just wanted to thank the listeners. Several of you have been writing into us and telling us that you're enjoying the shows that we've been doing on technology, and we really appreciate the feedback. As always, if you have suggestions for shows or for topics or anything like that, please reach out and tell us about them. We're always open and looking for people to come into the studio and help us put together some interesting shows. I haven't talked to you for a week. What have you been up to, Andrea?
Well, today I had the opportunity to go to a meeting of the New Hampshire EDA, which is the New Hampshire Economic Development Association. And the topic of the meeting was energy. There is so much going on with energy and businesses and efficiencies that, when I walked away from the meeting, I thought, what business isn't looking at that?
And there's a lot of concern about the cost of energy and dealing with the cost of energy. So conservation is, as you say, a big topic for everyone.
Yes. And the programs that presented were programs like the Jordan Institute's, resilient buildings.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a utility there present. There were some companies there presenting on the projects they've done. It was held at Hypertherm,
mm-hmm.
and an amazing, just a small change in when you flick the switch can really impact your utility bill if you're a business. And so it just underscores the importance of, and I'll say it again, if you're a business and you haven't looked at your energy consumption or your energy efficiency, you're leaving money on the table.
Well, this ties in nicely with our guest today, and I think what I'll do is since you're the person who was able to recruit our guest for today, maybe I can turn it over to you to talk a little bit about our guest and the topics. Based on the information that you told me, I think I'd like to explore her professional expertise, but also her avocation, which has to do with some exotic animals as well.
So. Yeah, she's an interesting person.
Yeah.
So today's guest is Sarah Johnson. We have the Ombudsman for the Department of Environmental Services.
Can you spell that? I can't spell that word.
Ombudsman. Man. Woman. Person.
Yeah, we'll have to get that clarified.
Yes. And so a little bit about Sarah. She received her undergraduate at Coastal Carolina University and then moved up to New England, I believe, because her husband was at the law school, then Franklin Pierce. And she went to Antioch and received a master's of science. And from there, she followed her passion, which is environmental protection. And she managed the P2 program for several years at DES. She joined DES and did that. And then for the last 8 years, she's been the ombudsman. And the ombudsman, the way I think of the ombudsman is that if you're a business and you need to interface with the agency, she is the perfect first stop. She's a wealth of information, and you could save yourself a lot of time. If you're a business, you want to talk to the agency by calling her first.
And she has a lot of interest in common with you because of they're all involved in sustainability and dealing with, proper disposal of, basically trying to keep us safe in the environment. And that is certainly your background.
Well, what we really try to do is to make sure that the New Hampshire economy stays strong while we do no harm to the environment.
Right.
And, they're not, being good to the environment and being good to your business are not mutually exclusive. And what Sarah does is focus on that my program at the New Hampshire Small Business Development Center does that. We're outside the agency, so it might give a business owner a slight, feeling of comfort to know that you're not calling a regulatory agency. But Sarah's program is really more geared to technical assistance, and I believe that they're also confidential and free. the same as our program.
Yeah, and it is interesting. This is, you know, Sarah's one of several state agencies that we've had in here on the show, and I just continue to be impressed at how little I know about the resources that are available, that are free and available out there for organizations to draw on. And I think that's one of the areas I'd like to try to extract from her today, is have her, you know, tell us a little bit about what they can do and all the resources. I think we'll be very impressed by what they have lined up.
Me too.
All right. Well, very good. So perhaps on that note, why don't we say that you're listening to 105.1 WBNH, Business IQ Radio. And I think I'll turn it over to you to invite our guest in.
Sarah, welcome to our program, Business IQ Radio. And, you know, it's really great that you could be with us today. The guests we have on this show, we have because we think that they bring some value to the business community. And as the ombudsman for DES, I think businesses should know who you are and, you know, understand that you are someone who can help them interact with the agency.
And I have to tell you that when I heard you were coming, I had to look up how to spell ombudsman because I couldn't quite figure that out. I think it's a non-English word, I think, right? Derived from German or something.
Well, that's funny. We were just talking about whether or not I go by ombudsman versus ombudswoman.
Oh, okay.
I try to use each of them as needed.
Person.
I will answer to all of those and above.
Nice.
We'll just call you a budding person. How about that? You know, spring is coming and all of that good stuff.
That's good. Well, before we jump into your role as ombudsman, I wanted to talk to you about your background a little bit, where you came from. And I know something about you, that you're a farmer, and we want to hear about that too.
Yeah, interesting.
So where'd you come from?
Originally, I'm from Illinois. I'm a transplant here in New Hampshire. We moved up here. My husband got into what is now called University New Hampshire Law School, but before it was called Franklin Pierce Law Center. And that's how we came up to New Hampshire over 20 years ago and wind up staying here in New Hampshire because it's a great place to raise kids and just be happy and have space. We came up here to do that. And then I was... went and got my master's here at Antioch New England College in Keene. And
very good school. I have several friends who went there. I actually looked at the PhD program there.
Yes, I have some friends that did that as well. When I was there, the PhD program didn't exist. So this is great that it's continuing to grow and expand. And I really fill a great void for people who are not 24, 22 years old. It's a lot of us were older and had families and have work experience that we knew we wanted to do something different with our lives, but needed another step of our education to get us there. And Antioch is a great place to get that.
And as you say, they have a lot of non-traditional students.
Right.
And even the courses that they offer are just very impressive because they're not, some of them are not ones you're going to easily see the specialization in environmental sciences and things of that nature. So I, quite frankly, when I was there and I was talking to the school, I met a cadre of other people who were also interested, and everybody was so impressive in the room. Was like, wow, this is – I didn't know these people lived in New Hampshire. It was so impressive.
There's a lot of us, and my degree was in resource management and administration. It's no longer offered. They've changed it up to, I think, more sustainability topics. I took a sustainable organization class 20 years ago, and it's very relevant today, and it puts me a little bit ahead of a lot of things. And that's actually how I got to DES and Environmental Services, because I wanted to make a connection between the environment and business. And you can have a good environment and still be a good business. It's just and make money. And there had to be a connection, and that's how it came about, is by joining Environmental Services through their pollution prevention program, which then they talk about energy and waste and reduction of resources to increase their bottom line, yet not pollute and not emit and to save water and really be a part of the whole system that is here. Yeah.
So before we dive into that, tell us a little bit about your family and your farm.
All right. So the farm came about, I live in Warner, New Hampshire, actually, and we wanted our children to experience what it's like to be rural. And one of my daughters is very good with animals, and we talked about getting goats or sheep. And my husband's like, let's get alpacas. And I'm like, what is that? Why not? And we went to, I think it was Hopkinton State Fair. And, you know, we learned about them a little bit and did a little research. And they are. They're a different kind of animal. They're goats and sheep can be a little destructive. Alpacas are not. They're quiet. They don't make those noises. They don't jump the fence. They kind of hang out. And so we have a herd of eight of them. We have a herd of eight, not for money or for their fiber, but because we do 4-H. And we've welcomed other kids who wanted to be a part of 4-H but didn't have the animals to do that. They can just borrow one of ours. And
Nice.
Yes, very lucky. Some of the other alpaca farms in the area actually gave us alpacas so we could do that and have these other kids be brought into our 4-H program.
What's the life expectancy of an alpaca?
Well, I'm told they're an exotic species. Very few know a lot about alpacas up here because it is quite different. The guess is about 20 years out in the wild. We're not real sure because they're from South America. And you can no longer import them from South America. It was done many years ago. So whatever the genetic lines we have in this country are the genetic lines in this country. And so we have a few and we hope they live maybe 20 years.
Do you breed them?
We do not. We only have boys. We have called fiber boys, which we shear once a year. And unlike sheep, where you can sometimes shear them twice, once in the May. They're more susceptible to heat than they are to cold. The cold, they're a mountain variety. They're from the Andes Mountains. So cold is not an issue. So that's why they're really easy to keep here in New Hampshire. All they need is a three-sided shelter, and it keeps them safe from the wind, and they're good.
Do they have names? Have you named
they
them?
They do. They
can you tell us?
Oh, my goodness. I hope I can. We have Tillman. Who was named after the football player. We have Mel Torme.
Who's named after Mel Torme.
And sings with a Spanish accent.
Yes, he is our oldest. He's the oldest of our, I think he's about 8 years old. We have Praxis, and his name is Praxis Makes Perfect. Jacob Black, because he's black after, that's called, what was that?
School of Rock?
No, it was the vampire movie. I can't.
No.
It's not coming.
No.
Jacob. Oh, Jack. It was the wolf versus the vampire werewolf.
Okay.
Anyways.
Twilight?
Twilight. That was it. Jacob Black. Because he's very handsome and he's very sweet. And then, let's see, the new ones are Sparkles, Caspar, Tyler, and Marcus. And right now, Marcus and Tillman are the naughty ones.
But. So are there people who make a living raising alpacas in New Hampshire?
Absolutely. People make a living from selling them, the fiber. There's a huge competition for the type of fiber that they make, the conformation.
Tell them what you're doing in a couple weeks.
Yes, and the next month is the New Hampshire Sheep and Wool Festival that is going to be in Deerfield, New Hampshire at the Deerfield Fairgrounds. There will be alpacas, llamas, goats, sheep, angora rabbits. There's even someone who spins dog hair. I'm not sure what kind of dog hair, but it's this big 3-day event, and it's a very interesting, educational. There'll be a lot going on in Deerfield that weekend, and we will go to that. And we have a 4-H event. We'll do an obstacle course. You do obstacle courses to build the trust between the child and the handler and the alpaca to go under things, in things, around things. And then they do a costume contest. alpacas don't like things on their head, so if you can do it often enough and work with them often enough, you get hats on them or masks. I've seen people actually put masks on them, which again, it shows that they've spent a lot of time with their alpacas and bodies. And then we also, they don't like things on their lower arms. So if you can get them to do things on their lower arms, and then you, of course, as the handler, you dress up as well and they get extra points for that. And it's just a fun event too.
So the fiber or the fur that you get from them, is it used to make hats or is it a filling for down coats or what? What are sort of the products that come out of this? I haven't thought about it. This is interesting.
This is, okay. I'll try to do the best I can. My husband and my daughter are actually the experts on this. So I knit, so we shear it, and then we send it to a place in Barrington, New Hampshire. There's actually a person who specializes in alpaca fiber, and they will spin it for you, clean it, fiber. It's a 8, 6, 10-step process that she goes through. She's very good in Barrington. And she then will send it back to us, and we have yarn, and we'll be in like a regular yarn. Because of the high quality and the time and effort put into it, it's considered highly rated. So you sell it. You won't buy it at Michael's. You'll need to go someplace else to get it, a local or these shows. And we sell a lot on eBay as well. And sometimes at the farmer's market, we'll go to a farmer's market and sell there. But you can make hats. You can make rugs. There's this another place. I don't remember if they're in Vermont or New York. You can send it to make braided rugs, which is a thicker one. So the kids will sit there and make rugs. It's pretty interesting. For there's three different parts of the alpaca, which has different layers of quality. Praxis is our best fiber maker. He, even though he's the smallest, he produces the best quality and the most of it. And he's white, so which is nice about that is you can dye it. And the best quality is the back and stomach. So you shear that off first. That's considered first order, and you want that. That's the good stuff. And then the seconds are the neck and the thighs and halfway down their legs. Sometimes that can be made into fiber. If they get a little too old, like Mel Torme, this is his last year. We're not going to use this fiber as a yarn because it's getting a little rough. And then there's the thirds, which is done for felting. And that felting can be made as any kind of felt. You can felt it out, you clean it out. And we also use it, and a lot of other alpaca farmers use it, as a mulch cover. Although I'm having a problem a couple years back with a bear, and the bears were very confused by the different colored mulch around my apple trees that they got into it and spread it all over our yard. We were like, okay, something's been here last night. Wow. and tried to eat it and realized it wasn't very pleasant to eat. So, but yeah, it's a whole business out there.
Wow.
We are definitely a minor cog in the wheel. There are some alpaca farmers that have hundreds at their property. They are the higher end stuff. Our fiber boys are just for fun and for family and pets. But it is an interesting industry that goes on in New Hampshire that you might
know. I love the
about.
Name of your farm. It's a great, you know, tell us what it is.
Curly Q Farm. It was one of our first alpacas, unfortunately, that didn't make it as long as we had hoped he would. So we named the farm after Curly Q. And he was a different type. There's two different types of alpacas, and I can't tell you the names if I tried.
Well, it's interesting. It just points out the very diverse community, the farming community is in the state. And all of these sub-businesses, we had one of Andrea's colleagues in who works actually at the SBDC in Keene talking about the growing microbreweries out in that part of the state and other things. So as an ombudsperson,
thank you.
What would you advocate for? What do you need us to help you get behind to advocate for to help with the alpaca marketplace and business?
Well, I'm not real sure about that. Since it's not our forte for my personal business, I do know there are issues with farming in general. There's manure management and groundwater runoff.
Right. And that very, very significant in chicken farms too, right?
Yes, very significant chicken farms and also pig farming, that you manage that correctly, not to you're worried about runoff, groundwater infiltration of that. And there has been issues with that. I've had a client had cows, and he was very close to the town drinking water well. And so we were able to find a new space for his cows on his property that could have that runoff go in a different direction. So manure management is one of the biggest things, as well as energy costs for them. And
so thank you. So you're listening to 105.1 WBNH FM Business IQ Radio, and our guest today is Sarah Johnson. She is the ombudsman with the Department of Environmental Services. And Sarah, can you tell us what is the ombudsman? What's your main role, and how to, you know, why would somebody access your office?
Well, I'm actually two people in one body. I am the small business ombudsman, and you call me when you may be in trouble. And then I'm also the Small Business Technical Assistance Program, and you call me before you get in trouble, because that's really where I'd rather be at, is helping you come into compliance with our environmental rules before somebody else discovers it. And a lot of my clients think they have an issue, they want to do the right thing, they want to comply with a new regulation or old regulation, but they're not sure. So they can call me, and I can walk them through the process, whether or not they are subject to the rule or not. And if they are and haven't done what they needed to do, whether it's a permit or to register as a hazardous waste generator, we can do that before anyone else discovers that that should have been done. And then they have a little
grace period.
Grace period, I would say, to come and to get help before. And that has happened a few times where a small business has come to me for assistance. We walked them through the process. We realized that they really do need a permit. What do we do now? Well, then I go do my ombudsman's hat comes on and says, okay, I have this company, didn't realize they were subject to this error rule. They are now in compliance with the error rule. What can we do? And most of the time, and I would say 95% of the time, they'll be like, we're just happy they're in compliance. Let's let it be. From this point forward, they have to be on this road to compliance. Excellent. And they won't go back. If something is really bad, when someone's intentionally polluting or intentionally dumping or intentionally hurting or harming someone, their neighbor, somebody living nearby, that's a completely off the table, you're in trouble. There's going to be consequences.
So I would guess that the majority of the people who work with you are in the manufacturing or process end of things, because it sounds as if the concern is that to get to an end product, there is some production that has to take place, and that has the potential to spin off items that might be hazardous to the environment. Is that
correct? Sort of? Most of my clients come from certain sectors. They are printers, they're dry cleaners, auto body shops, auto repair shops, anyone who's doing surface coating, we like to call that. You might be making parts and you have to paint it or dip it, metal finishers, a lot of polishing and plating lines. It's really for a small business that is generating a waste, generating emission. However, if you are a shop and you're a retailer and you have recycling problems, absolutely, you can still call me. We can still put you in contact with someone that can help you do a better job recycling. Or if you think there's an energy project that you can take part of, absolutely, you can still call. We'll put you in contact with that. I worked with one company that wanted to put in solar. And we're like, okay, well, let's see what kind of companies or get you a small business loan at a reduced interest rate. We can put you in contact with people of that as well. And so don't feel like, well, I'm not a polluter, so there, you can't help me. Oh, yeah, there's quite a bit. You know, we kid that I know, since I'm multimedia, and multimedia means I have expertise in air, water, and waste, and a little bit of energy, that I know a little bit about everything, and it makes me just a little bit dangerous, because then I can put you in touch with the right people. And another service we have, Environmental Services, that does that, if you're a new business or you're thinking about a new business, before you even sign the bottom line for that loan or find a location, I work with some businesses that will say, I want to do this, but I'm not sure where to go. We have a pre-application meeting where we will bring in that septic person, that wastewater person, the air person, the waste person, the hazardous waste person, and we'll all sit around table together, so you can come once to DES and talk to everyone that we think might be an issue in this town, in this location, in this sector, and get your questions answered all together. And then we know as staff people that we're all working with you. So you're more likely to get everything done at once. The biggest issue I hear is a company calls and said, well, I talked to DES. I'm like, yes, you talked to the person in water for groundwater withdrawals, but you didn't talk to hazardous waste, did you? It's like, well, yeah, I didn't talk to them because they told me I didn't. It's like, their expertise is only water. They're going to answer the questions in water. If you had come to me or pollution prevention or the pre-application person, you would have gotten the whole picture. And quite honestly, you might not know you need to ask these questions either. We will ask them for you to say, oh, wait, you can't discharge that. You're in septic. Let's come up with a plan B. That means you need let's put in a holding tank. Then you need to talk to this person on holding tanks. Or that won't be an option.
Or maybe you just want a different location altogether. So
you could do a different location, especially some towns have zoning, great zoning, and some do not, which is fine. And depending on where you're located, and you want to be aware of all those things too. And we do a lot of referrals to towns too. If someone calls me and wants to put in an auto body shop, excellent, no problem. You need to call your town to make sure they'll allow you to do it at your house. Mm-hmm. You also need to call the fire chief because they need to know what is going to be there. And they all wanted you to be safe as well as your property be safe. So we always say, whatever the fire chief says, you should do what the fire chief says.
So you're like maybe a gateway to all the departments, all the requirements that a business, either a new business or an existing business, would want to know about.
Mainly just environmental things. I'm not have the specialty on safety. However, I know a safety program I can call. I'm not the expert on economic development. However, I know who to send you to for economic development. I also would recommend trade associations. Let's say you are an auto repair shop. Well, there's a trade association. Let's get in contact with them to help you get on the right path too. And I'm really lucky. The people who call me want to do the right thing. They want to explore these options. They want to see what else is out there. And that's my assistance hat. Well, now we can talk about the ombudsman part. Let's say a complaint was come in and you were spray painting outside and your neighbor saw you spray painting outside and we got a complaint in environmental services. That type of call would also come to me and I would come out and visit you and explain to you, all right, here's what the rules say. Is this going to be a business or is this just you're painting your own car? Because those are different rules. And by coming through me, there won't be any enforcement on that. However, if this is referred to me and you don't come into compliance, that could go right back to the compliance folks and they'll have to determine what they want to do next.
So for the most part, you're free and confidential?
That is correct. I'm completely free. My salary and all my benefits and all the things I do, workshops, web page development, outreach activities are all through the Clean Air Act. Back in 1999, the Clean Air Act had an amendment, and they included a Title V program, which is for the big guys. It is the companies who are very large that emit a lot of air emissions, and they have to pay a fee on these air emissions. And those air emissions come to DES, and DES then can spend that money on my services because small businesses they're smart, they're brave. They are, they want to be their own boss and that's awesome, but they don't always have expertise in taxes, insurance, environmental issues, economic issues, labor issues, safety issues. It's a lot for one or two people to try to take on. So by creating a small business ombudsman for environmental, we offer those services to help them come into compliance without having to pay any fees for that.
So do we trace, are you the first ombudsman we've had in the state, or has it been since this Title V grant came into existence?
Officially, I think we adopted it in 1992 or 93. I can't remember. I think the process started in 92 and it became active in 1993. So there was someone else before me that did that.
Okay, interesting. And is all of DES funded federally, or do you get any funds from the state?
It's all over. It's generally funded. It's fees, registration fees. It's federal funding. It's all over. But grants, we all apply for grants from not just EPA, but other programs.
And who do you report up into in terms of the structure of the state here?
So for me personally, my program?
Yeah, and DES, what is it part? Is it a standalone agency? Does it report to the governor?
Yes. All right, so my program is within the commissioner's office, and we have a bureau called Planning, Prevention, and Assistance, and that includes the Pollution Prevention Program, myself, as well as Household Hazardous Waste. And then my boss reports directly to our acting deputy commissioner, and that's how that works for that. And as for DES, our commissioner reports to the governor.
Has there been any – so I know the – previous commissioner, which was Tom Burak, has left. And who's the acting commissioner?
Right now, Clark Frisey is our acting commissioner. A new one has been nominated. I have no information on
right.
that.
Okay.
Yeah.
At least then you're going to share.
Right.
No, so, that I really don't know. Other than reading what NPR said, I've got nothing.
That's okay. We don't want to push on that. But so who... Is just any business eligible to call you, or are there specific requirements?
There are some requirements. You have to be a small business. You have to be under 100 people. Now, granted, if you have 102 people, go ahead and call me.
But because SBA, their definition is different.
Ours is 100. And then we also say you can't be a franchise, basically. You can't be owned by a larger corporation that creates you to be a bigger thing. And it's because my services are free and they want to go to those small businesses that really need my assistance and need my time. With one person doing role two, I really need to spend my time and priorities on those small businesses that want to be in the state making money. I say that all the time. When I go on visits to businesses and the phone rings, I'm always like, pick it up. You need to make money. Pick it up. We'll talk later. Not a problem. I'll come back later. That is their job, is to stay in business. And that's what I'm there for, is to make sure they stay in business the best as they can.
That's great. So I have a cheat sheet here, as you see. And it's so interesting. One of the criteria for being eligible, according to the sheet, is that they are not dominant in their field. Now, how do you define that?
You know, that's funny. I've never really had that issue. I guess there are a few small companies out there, very unique to New Hampshire, that produce something that maybe nobody else produces. But I've never run into that. Okay. Most of my clients are auto body shops, printers, screen printers.
Well, yeah. That probably gets to the small business issue that you were mentioning, because a large organization would have command a very large market share. And if they're a small business, they're not going to have a large market share, except in a really niche kind of market, as you just said, you know, making widgets or something for alpaca.
I did meet one time, we had a pre-application meeting for someone wanting to move to the state, wanted to redesign a certain type of battery, and I'm not going to say what kind. And it was pretty interesting to be right there on that forefront going, this is an amazing new technology that's going to come to New Hampshire. We're all for it. So helping them to determine if they need hazardous waste and air permit and stuff like that. I don't believe they needed any, because it was research and design, they weren't actually going to be generating anything in masses. But if ever went to manufacturing, that would have been when we would get involved.
Right.
So that was pretty exciting to be a part of that.
Right. And do you get involved with more and more? We talk about as soon as you put up a website, you're an international business. There must be some concerns here in terms of people shipping products across state lines or receiving goods from other places. I would think it could get complicated in terms of some of the rules or regulations people have to deal with in terms of handling materials and being able to stock them and keep them in place. And
yes, and that's not part of Environmental Services' role. That comes out through DOT, Chamber, no, what's it called? The commerce laws.
Okay.
That all comes through there. However, we do have a registration of hazardous waste transporters, and we will pull over a hazardous waste transporter to verify that they're doing what they're doing.
So what is the state of the environment in New Hampshire these days? Are there areas that you're concerned about?
I would say the best place to find that out, we have this great new icon on our webpage. It's called the Environmental Dashboard. And if you click on it, if you go onto our webpage, which is des.nh.gov, and on the left-hand side, it has this little green and black graph that you can click on, and it will give you the most recent view of our environmental data, of what's going on, whether or not it's invasive species, water quality, air quality, hazardous waste cleanup. It's right there, and that gets updated pretty regularly. I haven't been on it this week to see what it is, although we are talking about the drought and we're feeling pretty good about all this rain right now, how we can promote water conservation because of the drought. But that environmental dashboard is brand new. More states are going to force something like this. It's just been recently updated. It's got a great message from Tom Durek on it. I highly recommend taking a look at that. That will give you the up-to-date of what we have.
Yeah, your homepage is a great, really very useful place. It's easy to navigate. One of the things on the homepage, in addition to the dashboard, is One Stop. Can you tell us a little bit about One Stop?
Yeah, One Stop is pretty great. I use it myself, even though I have access to other databases in the agency. Anyone, and I'm talking a business, a resident, a citizen, can go onto this One Stop and pull up and do a search of a address, a business, a lot number, whatever, to find out who's at this address, what kind of waste they're generating, do they have an air permit, do they have a water record, do they have a spill that happened 5-10 years ago. It's excellent for someone who wants to go into business but not sure what type of property they should buy. They can do a little research on that property to see, oh, look, there was a spill there. Do I really want a property that had a spill but was cleaned up? Because there could be some residual there, depending on what you want to do in that property. But it's a great site to get a lot of information, and it's available to everyone, and it's there, and I use it myself.
So if an existing business wanted to know what was out there on them, they could look themselves up.
Yes, and we highly encourage that, because sometimes things get on the databases wrong. Let's say you submitted a hazardous waste manifest to us 2 months ago, and it's still not up there. I would definitely take a call in to figure out what happened to that piece of paper, because we want to have record of it, because you probably, everything was right, but maybe it didn't get sent to us, and you need to follow up on that. And that's a great way to follow up without calling anybody, without calling attention to yourself. You can just go online and look that up. You can also, I have told some of my clients to look at their competition, and because if they have a permit that you don't have, you should probably check that out, because maybe you should call me, because maybe you should have one. Or if I get some of my shops think they are special, and they are all special in their own ways, but that they do something differently. And I'm always like, well, you know, you guys all paint and you all are generating the same waste, so you all have to manage it the same way. I understand maybe your process is a little different, but it's still there and you still got to manage it. So if I'm not seeing it up online, that's a red flag for someone else to see. And so you need to fix that now and come into compliance and be done with it.
Boy, the range of rules and regulations that you have to navigate is must be amazing. And I just think about, we only have, I think, like 13 or 15 miles of coastline here, but there are businesses, and I'm guessing that dealing with material being done that you're going to actually waste into ocean water, into the Atlantic, is probably different than if you're going to dump it into Sunapee or Lake Sunapee or something like this. And you get into probably very different jurisdictions. And
yeah, that's a great question, because unfortunately I know a little bit about everything. There is an RSA where it's illegal to discharge.
RSA stands for
regulated. Oh no, wait.
It's a state statute. Right.
And I think it's 485, if I remember right, about wastewater discharge, that you cannot discharge wastewater into any surface body. That includes the Atlantic as well as the lakes or rivers.
Is it navigable?
No, that's a different rule. Okay. That's a different rule. Without a permit, and we may issue a permit, but
so you wouldn't approve of what Fukushima is doing, dropping 3 tons of radioactive waste into the Pacific every day. Okay,
no, that's funny. I don't. Well, you know, actually, I don't know. There could be certain rules for emergency situations. There are rules for emergency situations as well. So there's rules on that, and which is why when I had a marina project to teach marinas who maintain boats and they clean boats, they have to manage their wastewater properly. They can't go right into the ocean or to the river or the lake. And quite frankly, marinas are smart. They are a smart business. They know the money they make are because of the lake that they're on, and they are not going to dirty it. Because they know they will lose money if that lake gets dirty. So that's one of the best sectors I worked with, because they are very focused on that. And they're mostly outdoor guys too. They're fishermen. They're hunters. They want that water to stay clean. So they would put different things in place to minimize anything going into the water.
Yeah, I have a little bit of indirect experience in this, in that I had a family member who worked for one of the large oil companies and was in charge of overseeing the decommissioning of gas stations and the removal of the tanks that were underground and dealing with leakage issues. And boy, they had a lot of liability tied up in that area. Do we see that in the state, those kinds of issues?
We actually have a fabulous underground storage tank program that includes outreach, inspections. I actually did I shadowed one of the inspectors so I could learn more about what they do when they inspect underground storage tanks, whether it's for piping and venting and closures. And it was very interesting. I learned a lot from them. And we do. We have this wonderful program now, and I'm certified in it too, to be a operator, to know what rules they're supposed to follow, how often they're supposed to do testing, how often they're supposed to monitor, are the monitoring equipment acting properly, and how often to do that, how to check for leaks, how to change the filters when needed in the gas stations, you know, the dispensers. It's a great program. And I do get sometimes businesses wanting to go into that business, in the gas station business, and I highly recommend calling that program. And again, you can find that on our webpage for the underground storage tank program and get certified in that. It's a very educational thing.
DES has come a long way with respect to educating the consumer, the business community. You guys run a lot of education, and some of it is education that a business owner could get a certification in, like hazardous waste certification. And I think that's great, as opposed to letting businesses kind of out there trying to figure it all out. You bring them in, very friendly platform, very informative. The other program, or another program, is that pollution prevention program, which is very active in the state, and they've focused on many industries. Can you talk a little bit about how you partner? Well, tell us about the P2 program and how you partner with them.
So the pollution prevention program is literally on the other wall. I can actually yell for Melissa on the other side of me. And they do work to minimize or to eliminate waste, whether it's actual hazardous waste or solid waste, air emissions, or reduce water conservation. And they work with businesses, and they're doing a microbrewery project right now to look into that, because microbreweries use a lot of water. We're trying to reduce that. And then they have some sludgy stuff after the the fermenting process and mm-hmm. how to deal mm-hmm. with that. So they're working with that. They've also done energy projects. They can come into a business and take a walk through, look at your lights, see what kind of lights you have, what kind of other energy uses. They actually, one of them went to a compressed air workshop today to find out more about that. But there's also variable speed drives are another great place to reduce energy. And they'll come in and make recommendations to how to reduce and maybe help you prioritize that. And that's awesome, too, because we don't want to waste energy. And they also do outreach programs. They have a couple new videos that they've put out there. They have one on climate change that they do. That's pretty interesting. And what businesses can do to address climate change in their businesses. And they do a lot of outreach as well. They have a Wastelines newsletter, webpage. And
so it's hands-on help. So the representatives, DES representative from P2, will actually go to the business, walk through, leave them with information, and the ombudsman's office is tied to all of that, right? You help execute that.
Yeah. Sometimes, like, actually, we got a referral the other day for a business that just recently put in spray booth, wants to start spray booting, painting their own equipment. And because of that, they may need an air emission air permit. So it came through another program and then came to me. And then I was like, I really should bring P2 into it, because maybe we can get them on a different product. One of the things that puts spray painting into another category is what's in the spray paint. Some spray paint has heavy metals, and we do not want heavy metals going into the air. There are lots of different product lines out there that don't contain heavy metals. And maybe we can convince them to change that up. And sometimes that change is super simple, and sometimes you might have to work with one of your clients to convince them that this doesn't need to have lead in it, but it can be done. And so we could bring in another person like P2 to do that, because there's plenty of work to go around. We all want to help. We all want this business to succeed. We want them to be in business for a long time, and we want them not to emit if they don't have to emit, or waste what they don't have to waste.
Yeah. So you're listening to WBNH 105.1. Our guest today is Sarah Johnson, who's with the New Hampshire Department of Environmental Services and is the Small Business Technical Assistance Program, and someone who I imagine doesn't get very much sleep, because it sounds like she's amazingly busy. Sarah, I wanted to ask you a question. Since there are so very many people who would be interested and need your help and assistance, is there any kind of a movement afoot to create some self-assessment tools or other tools where people can do a self-evaluation as a preliminary before they actually engage with you or get a sense of what they might need?
Or is there another program in the state that could help a business prep to come see you? Oh, let me think. Small Business Development Center.
But we need somebody who is knowledgeable in the environmental and sustainability area. Are there any such, Andrea?
I think there is.
Oh, maybe in Manchester?
There could be.
Okay, good. Well, let's take it back to Sarah. Do you folks have any sort of online tools or assessment tools like that?
We do. There's the webpage, obviously, but there are there is this program through the Green Yards program for salvage yards that has this wonderful online training program, which you go through and answer various questions to see where you are with your used oil management, with antifreeze management, with batteries. And you can go through, click on these various topics and learn. And at the very end, you get a certificate that says, I learned all this stuff and I'm good.
I just had a client that bought a salvage yard in the state, and I took him to the Green Yard website. Yep. You know, it's and we shared that information, and so it's very good, very informative.
Yeah, you brought up a big issue because I do a lot of work with data centers around mm-hmm. the country, handling batteries, very big issue, especially sealed lead acid batteries. You know, that it's a very expensive process to get rid of those in an environmentally responsible way, and it's amazing how costly some of this can be. But the alternative is to pollute the environment. And quite frankly, in that industry, you don't want to get a bad name and reputation, because it's your name and reputation that people will make a decision to do business with you or not. You want to be known as green.
You bring up a very good point with the lead acid batteries, because that has a federal program that regulates lead and acid together. And that's the Tier 2 program out of EPA. So if you're dealing with data centers that have a certain amount of lead-acid batteries over a certain weight, they have to notify EPA that they have these things on their facility. And the fines are very stiff for not notifying them. Yeah.
Well, the other side of that is 50% of the energy consumed in a data center is used to cool the servers. And so, you know, it is not unusual for data centers to have $2 or $3 million a month energy bills for electricity. So in many cases, the utilities want to really know what's going on. And if you're going to be building a data center, you need to lock in, because if you suddenly say, oh, and by the way, in 3 months, I expect to have 4 megawatts of power delivered to me, you got to give these people some notice. So it's a very, very interesting area.
Well, and it's funny, when you talk about lead acid batteries, my mind directly goes to groundwater, because I don't want that to get into our groundwater. And
sure.
I think the quote is 40 to 45% of New Hampshire residents get their water from groundwater. So we don't want to pollute that. That will affect you personally. That will affect your family, affect your neighbors. So being very aware of what is touching the ground and getting into the ground is very important.
You have one shot at groundwater protection. Once it's spoiled, you know, the cleanup is... I don't even know if the cleanup is possible with, you know, in a short period of time. And you've got families that their property values go down. If they have children, they're very concerned about the health effects. So groundwater is something we really have to protect.
Right. And so we're very happy about all this rain so we can have to recharge our groundwater right now. Good. So I know the snowstorm nobody wanted last week, but people at DES, we were very excited about that. That 14 inches, we're like, yes, that's good snow.
So as a side question, you bring up this issue of water. I know that for a long time, some of the ski resorts were looking to grow and expand, and they wanted to tap water, river water resources, to be able to make snow on some of the new areas they wanted to put up. Is that something you would get involved in? My only knowledge of who was involved to give a technical opinion was the Army Corps of Engineers, is who they often turn to. But is this an issue that comes up in DES?
Absolutely. We had a program with the ski industry a few years ago, and this was probably us. Actually, it was 2001, 2002. Was it that late ago? I don't know. So ski areas have huge energy resources. They have huge water resources, and they're seasonal. So it's tough to make their money all at once. Luckily, a lot of the ski areas are going year-round by adding different kind of activities. I actually have a meeting next week. There's going to be a ski workshop up in North Conway, and we've been asked someone from DES to come up and talk about engines, and which will bring in gasoline and diesel as well, and that protection, water defection. So the ski industry has a great, Ski New Hampshire Association has a great program, and they have been focusing on environmental issues for a long time, and they look into these things. They ask those questions. But if a ski area wants to put in new trails, that's a lot of different changes in permits. There is alteration of terrain permits they have to get. There are stormwater permits might be necessary, additional water draws from a surface or below ground is talked about. So it's one of those big things that they need to come into DES and make sure they cover all their bases, because we don't want to find out afterwards. And another thing that usually happens is if when they add things, add a building, add a trail, they're increasing the amount of gasoline or diesel they have on site, because now they have more space to clean and to groom, and they forget to tell us that they've upgraded their above ground storage tanks. That's another thing they got to remember to do. It's tough. So yeah, you know, we call ourselves environmental services for a reason. We are here because we want them to be in business, but we just want them to do it the right way and minimize any risk to the environment. Mm. So just call us.
So ski hills have to pay attention. What about golf courses?
You know, the P2 program did a program with the golf courses as well, because of the pesticides and the runoff and the energy use as well, and maintaining those facilities. And they did a great project with that. It's, again, if you go to our webpage, you'll find there's a page on a golf industry on that. And there is actually one, I hate to throw it in, but there's one in Maine that is a totally organic, don't use any pesticides. It's all natural. I mean, they're mowing it and stuff, but that's supposedly something. It'd be great if other golf courses did that, but they don't have to. But golf courses is another issue, especially with nitrates, if they're near drinking water.
And it's so important because, as we said before, the drinking water is a focal point, and golf courses have such large surface areas that the chemicals they use on their greens or their fairways filter down into the groundwater. And so that's something that golf courses, you know, we're talking about recreational facilities, golf courses have to pay attention to. And if a golf course wanted to get more information, they could go to the ombudsman's office.
They could. And I would also recommend they talk to the Department of Agriculture, because interesting enough, they handle the pesticide management side of things. They do the registration for spreading of pesticides and the qualifications of all that. So if you call us, we're also going to refer you to them if that's what's needed.
Sarah, let me ask you, what about people who want to rehab buildings? We, for example, had a show a few weeks ago with the initiative taking place in Franklin, where they're trying to rehab a bunch of downtown buildings. And I don't know anything about this state, but in my work in other parts of the country, when there are events from either severe wind or hurricane damage, you might expose some asbestos that had been sealed and people thought were in a safe condition. And the whole issue of debris management and removal of debris after severe weather situations is a topic that gets a heck of a lot of attention at the conferences that I go to. Do you folks get involved in?
Yes, we have a whole asbestos program that does that, as well as educate our towns that if there's going to be a renovation, because you have to get a permit to do a renovation in your town, you need to notify us as well, because you have to prove that there's no asbestos. And if there is asbestos, that you will hire someone to remove it, as well as mercury switches. That's another thing we like to look for, especially on the thermostats. And we want them to go through that process through us and get approved for that. And so that's one of our partnerships, is working with towns that may be the first line that comes in. Well, someone will go to the town to get a permission, and then they'll come to us later. And the other thing is, fire departments also have to, if they want to do a training department, if they want to do a training exercise where they can burn down a structure, they have to come through us to get permission as well, so we know about it, because we do get complaints about smoke, not just the fire department. We need to know that structure is clear of asbestos and lead and mercury.
Right. And lead paint, right.
Right.
Wow. So you not only help businesses, but you're involved in municipalities. And we are coming to the end of the show, but I wanted to mention the initiative you had in schools. We have a minute to do that. So can you tell us about what you did in schools?
Yeah. A long time ago, we did a project for schools that schools have an obscene amount of chemicals in their stash in their storage rooms. And although many schools have done a great job of getting rid of a lot of those stashes and the storage of chemicals that are not necessary or could be a danger to themselves or the students, and because managing those chemicals, it's a lot to take on into what can go down the drain to the sewer, what can not go down to the septic, how to make sure nothing is mixed incorrectly that might, you know, cause fire or something, or inhale something that's dangerous. So we did a clean out. We actually paid, we got some money from a grant and paid for the disposal of chemicals from photo labs, art labs, the chemistry labs, biology labs, anything, some even vocational schools to get rid of some stuff, and pay for that stuff to get disposed of properly. And I can't tell you how wonderful the science teachers were to say thank you, because it's stressful for me to have all this stuff here and worry about some kid getting hurt. Now mm-hmm. having this all out, I don't have to worry about mm-hmm. it. There's great experiments they can do with minimal, if no, chemicals. Some of them are even going to internet videos and how to do reactions. So why not do something safe and clean and so no one gets hurt?
That's great. So you're a resource for towns too.
Right.
Well, this brings us to the end of our show today.
Can we get you to tell us one more time how people can reach you and find out? And also, where would they learn about these workshops? Do you have a newsletter that people can sign up for?
We have DES. If you go to our webpage, des.nh.gov, on the left-hand side, there is an icon called e-news. And you click on that and you register your email to get press releases, education, rules updated, as well as something that might interest you, whether it's water conservation or the Lakes Program or whoever else is creating newsletters. You can get on their email list right there and get all that information. And I highly recommend that for small businesses to do that, because they love to say, well, I didn't know about this rule change. I'm like, well, if you're on e-news, you would get that information. And then you would call me to say, I don't understand. Is this subject to me? Yes, it is. No, it's not. And that's your first line of defense, is knowledge is power, but you have to have access to that power. So join our e-news and get that information. We also have a Twitter feed you can get on. That's fun. I put stuff on it. I just put something out there about open wood burning, whether or not you should determine if your wood is wet, because you don't want to burn wet wood. It puts out more smoke. So it's another great resource for some quick and easy stuff.
And how do people reach you if they want to, if they say, I've got to speak to my ombudsperson?
You can call me directly at 271-1379. Again, 271-1379. Or you can go to the webpage and find me under Small Business Ombudsman. I'm also under Business. I'm there under Small Business. I'm there over Assistance. You can find me multiple ways. And it really doesn't matter who you call at DES. If we're not the right person, we will help you find that right person. We do not throw you into a box that you don't. Somebody's inbox you'll never hear from. That's not who we are. It will always go back to the front desk, and we will always try to find the right person.
Sarah, thank you so much for coming and talking with us today. I love all the work that you do, and I think it really helps our state maximize its gem, which is its environment. It's kind of our brand, and so I'm so glad to know that the Ombudsman's Office is staffed with such a capable and passionate person. Thank you.
By the way, do you have anything coming up in the near term that people want to take advantage of?
I do not have anything up in the near term. I'm trying to think. If you go to our webpage, there is a calendar that would list all the workshop opportunities, and I would recommend going to that as well. And I just want to say thank you so much for having me, too. It's been great. Thank you, Andrea, for inviting me. Thank you, Don.
Great. And can we get your telephone number one last time for the audience?
Yes, it's 603-271-1379. And I do get calls from people out of state, and that's great, too, because we want you to come to New Hampshire and build your business here. So
that's
603-271-1379.
Well, great. Thank you. Thank you very much, Sarah. So we've come to the end of the show. You know what that means?
Yeah, Andrea? I do. I do know what that means.
All right. I'm going to turn things over to you.
I'm going to remind our listening audience that you can spend more than you make, but you can only do it for so long.